Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Old Men and the Three ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
You know, these long West Coast trips to call games have given me the gift of time. Time to put on some headphones and listen to my favorite audio titles on Audible. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. From bestsellers and new releases to celebrity memoirs, mysteries, and thrillers, motivation, wellness, business, and more. Now, I personally love a good murder mystery, and I'm currently listening to An Honest Man by Michael Corrida. It's about murders on a yacht. What more do I need to say? As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/JJ or text JJ to 500-500. That's audible.com/JJ or text JJ to 500-500. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good, but that's when you say to yourself, it's time to get back in the game and take as much of my friend's money as I possibly can. That's right. The hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to be the biggest tycoon ever. It's classic Monopoly, but anytime with tons of twists. Play on countless Monopoly boards, charge your friends rent, or smash their landmarks with a wrecking ball. You can even team up with friends for extra rewards. So put on your game face and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
As always, this podcast is presented by Cash App. Tommy, this is, to me, the most versatile payment app on the market. There's so many things you can do. Obviously, you can transfer money if someone picks up a bar tab or someone loses on the golf course. But there's so many other things that you can do on Cash App. Shout out Cash App.
Welcome to The Old Man and the Three with JJ Redick and Tommy Alter, presented by Cash App and brought to you by 342 Productions. This is episode 92, Nick Nurse. Tommy, this is a bonus episode. We are launching our coaching series. This
Nick Nurse, head coach of the Raptors. Nick, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate the time.
Yep, glad to be here. Good to see you.
Good to see you as well. Last time I saw you, I was competing against you, so this is nice. This is nice just to have a chat.
Those were some rough days, man. I was just going to say, you were hard to prepare for and hard to compete against, but I'm glad you're done. I don't know if you are or not. A lot of coaches around the league are, myself included.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm happy. I want to get a little bit of your background. You grew up in Iowa. You were at Northern Iowa. And then you play this year. I'm very curious about right after college. You played it for a year in the British Basketball League.
Yep.
For the Derby Rams.
Yep.
And you were the player coach.
Yep.
Describe that year to me.
Well, it was really interesting, and I learned a lot. So I'm done playing at Northern Iowa. I had a couple clubs flirting with me to go play. Kind of missed playing Germany, Brazil, a couple places. I was kind of staying in shape. I'd moved to Iowa City. I was going to go to grad school and work for Dr. Tom Davis at the University of Iowa. And this guy calls me up from England and says, I'd sent out, you know, this is pre-internet days, if anybody can remember those, but I'd sent out a few packets of a cover letter and a resume and some newspaper clippings to about 7 or 8 teams, Australia, Japan, Germany, England, to see if I could just find a job and play a little bit longer. I wasn't very good in college, but I wanted to keep playing. This guy calls me up and he says, hey, it says here on your cover letter, you're interested in playing and or coaching overseas. How about both? And I said, what? He said, well, we have a tight budget here and we usually bring an American guy over to be our player coach. And I said, sure. I think it was about $300 a week and I was going to be the head coach. And I got over there and, I was a point guard in college, and basically it was like almost not having a coach and just being the point guard calling plays and things like that. It was super interesting, pretty low budget team, had a pretty good starting five, had no bench to speak of. Like, I played every minute of every game, gave myself the green light all the time. And it was fun though, really, really, small little gym. We practiced twice a week on Tuesdays and Friday nights. It was interesting, man. It was fun.
How did the other guys receive you?
Well, the funny part was is that, you know, they know it's pretty low level and low budget, right? There was one couple older guys, like my center, my starting center was like 35. So I was like 22 years old at the time, I think, doing this, maybe 21. I graduated, 21, 22. And that part was kind of weird at first, to have guys in their 30s that I was coaching. That was just something I hadn't even really considered. And you know what? It was more like I just had to, you know, play my guts out, right? If we were running sprints in practice, I was trying to win them. You know, we were doing shooting drills. I was trying to win, you know, just trying to get that competitive thing to just rub off, you know, and it kind of did. You know, we end up playing pretty good. And after a month or two goes by, they kind of just respect how hard you play more than your coaching, right?
So if you wrote on the resume that you were open to a coaching job, I assume you had thought about coaching before. Yep. That. Did that year sort of reaffirm your desire to coach, or was it a bit of a disaster in that regard?
No, it was I got a degree in accounting, and I was going to, like, you know, I was going to be an accountant and go get a job and all that stuff. And about, I don't know, right in the start of my senior year in college, I was like, my God, I'm like going to be done with this sport like forever here in a little bit. And I was like, you know, no way. You know, I was like, you know what it's like when you put your whole heart and soul and every thought of your whole day into trying to become the best player you can become. And I was like, there's just no way I can walk away from this now. And I just went over and talked to my coach and talked to the AD at the time at Northern Iowa. And I said, I can't be an accountant yet. I got to coach and get this basketball thing, see if it's going to. And then that was it. So I knew I wanted to stay around the game. So I went and coached and got to play another year. And that was the start of keeping it going. And I've somehow stayed employed ever since then.
Do you feel like that unique experience helped you at all when it comes to just like managing people? Like, we talk about this with a lot of different types of leaders on the show, not just coaches, mm-hmm. but managing, every locker room is different with the personalities and everything like that.
Well, I mean, I think that, one of the biggest things about leading a team, right? That's really what it is. You know, I mean, the X's and O's and all that stuff is like really, really important, but it's like 15% of the job, I always say.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a really important 15%. I mean, we can talk about, seem like every locker room I've ever gone in my whole life, I get up there and they're like, who in the hell is this guy? You know, and you got, again, it's almost like I went back and tried to earn the trust or the communication or the just whatever, the leadership role by playing so hard in that job. And then when you get a little older and you can't go out on the court, you've got to be solid with your tactics and your planning, and all that gets you, again, a little more respect, and the communication then opens, and the trust and all that stuff. So yeah, it was valuable.
You had a lot of stops prior to the NBA.
Sure did.
Too many to name.
Sure did, man. Too many.
I'm trying to sort of frame the mindset, yep. of a 23-year-old who basically finishes his playing career. There had to be an openness to just be in the game and take a job.
Yep.
Could you ever have imagined that it'd take you around the world the way it did?
Not really. I think that it was a couple of things, right? Like going to Derby, Rams out and being the player coach, that was more because I just wanted to play a little bit. Right. And I figured, oh, well, you know, I want to coach too, so that'd be kind of cool. And then, you know, like the very next year, I got offered at 23 years old, I got offered a head coaching job in college, in my home state at Grandview University, a little NAIA school. And I was like, geez, man, this is unbelievable. They're offering me this job. So I started doing that. And then I went to be an assistant at the University of South Dakota. So I was like, you know, envisioning climbing the college ranks and trying to be a college head coach someday. And even my next trip back to England, which was like 4 years later, was because I wanted to head coach again, because I thought I'd learned a bunch of stuff in 5 years. And I was like, I got to try it somewhere on somebody. I got to start experimenting here a little bit. And I was going to do it for 1 year. And then, you know, I went over there in a year and we won the title, and it was really cool. And then I got the team, big kind of big team in Belgium called and like, oh my God, they're actually going to actually get paid for working now. You know, they're going to actually pay me a decent salary. And, you know, and it just kind of kept moving from there. And I don't even really remember the question I'm trying to answer right now, but no, it just kind of kept happening, I think, in things, but it kept becoming interesting to me. It was like super interesting to live there. I was starting to get involved. Like, you know, Maurizio would run the stuff in Treviso, and I'd go down there and coach in the summers, and I'd go to the EuroLeague Final Four, and I would go to the World Championships in Turkey. And I was just finding all these interesting basketball things to do. And it was just, great experience. I knew that, and really interesting to me.
Part of coaching in the NBA, I've talked with a bunch of people about this, but part of coaching the NBA to me is obviously, as Tommy mentioned, managing egos, having basketball acumen. You have to be able to warrant a level of respect with your players, or NBA players will eat you alive. Yep. They just will. Yep. That's just how this works. Were there moments or years specifically early on that sort of gave you the confidence that you look back on, that, I guess, pivotal years,
yeah, for sure,
where that made a difference in terms of having a healthy ego? Because any coach at this league has to have a healthy ego to operate a locker room.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the very first year I was here as an assistant, and this is exactly what you're talking about. And what you just said, you feel that, like, you know, we're sitting here in our film room, and when you walk in and it's your scout as an assistant for the first time, and these guys are sitting there, and you're right, they're not only there, they're looking for any reason to pick you apart. You know, you misspell one word on the edit, or you know how to spell, you know, anything. And it's not easy. Because they're also going to, you know, there's several ways to cover a lot of players, or several ways to cover a lot of actions or plays or whatever. So they could always say, well, I like covering it that way, or that way's better, or this way's better than what you know. So I just think that I relied on hard work. 20 years of head coaching experience put me in a lot of situations. I'd seen a lot of basketball and had to, like, deal with it, not just sit back and say, hey, maybe try this, coach. I mean, I was dealing with it on the front lines in some pretty high level, EuroLeague and things like that. And you just have to, when you go up there to put up that game plan and tell them how to guard the personnel, it's got to be solid. And if you do that, then, as you know, NBA guys are also on the other side of that. They really want you to coach them. They really want you to put them in a position where they can have a good game. They want you to help them. They want to succeed. And if you can show that you're able to do that, then the thing turns pretty quickly, I think.
If you've been following the pod, you know I'm stepping my suit game up as I'm calling more and more games. So shout out Indochino for getting me all prepared for this home stretch of games. It's also wedding season, so you can get in on looking great. With a fully custom suit from Indochino, you'll walk into the wedding season looking like $1 million, even though the suits start at just $499. You can either book an appointment at one of their showrooms or do what I did and set up your measurement profile on Indochino's website and choose customizations without even leaving the house. I just ordered a nice plum suit with pinstripes. I'm trying to tap into my inner Walt Frazier, and I think it's working. The entire process was super simple, and the suit fits great. That's the sweet spot. So look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor when you wear Indochino. Go to Indochino.com today and use code OLDMAN to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com, promo code OLDMAN. If you're like me and appreciate great quality, easy-to-wear clothes in your closet, let me introduce you to Rails. They're a Los Angeles-based brand that blends their California roots with an elevated European aesthetic, and the fabrics feel as good as they look. From super luxe button-downs and essential outerwear to vacation-ready shorts and tees, Rails is consciously crafted for the modern man on the move. With the sun coming out, I recently got myself a few short sleeve button downs, and they are super light and comfortable. Try Rails for yourself at their flagship stores in New York, San Francisco, Boston, London, Paris, and beyond, or at rails.com. And take 15% off your order with the code JJ. That's 15% off with code JJ at RAILS.com.
I spent a year with Chris Finch in New Orleans, who also coached in the BBL, the Rio Grande Valley Vipers like you did. One of the things he mentioned to me during our time together was the BBL and coaching in the G League as well gave him opportunities to think outside the box. And that's something that Pascal just talked about with us an hour ago.
Yeah.
And certainly you've been credited with that. How much did those opportunities give you a chance to sort of develop that different way of thinking?
Yeah, well, it develops on you. You almost get forced out of the box. You know what I mean? It's not like you're sitting here saying, oh, you know, I'm going to be a creative outside the box thinker. I mean, you just, you know, what are the situations? I don't know. You get on the bus and you're getting a huge traffic jam and the game that, you know, you miss the starting time by an hour and you know, you're down to six players literally. And you're like trying to figure out, well, how are we going to get through this? You know, a six game, well, we're going to hold the ball for the whole first quarter. You know, we're going to run the shot clock, you know, we're going to shorten, take one quarter out of it. You know, I mean, just in there, in every thing you can think of, you know, like, I don't know, like just all the, some of the stuff in different forms. You know, there was one team over there that had this point guard that just absolutely controlled the game, like every game. He was like this 38-year-old dude, and he just was awesome, right? And I just decided, you know what? We're just never going to let him bring the ball up the floor. And we're, you know, we're just never going to let him just run at his, the game. Whatever else happens, I'm willing to live with, you know, things like that you would just try because you were probably such an underdog. And you might as well throw something up there and do it. I mean, there was tons of stuff like that. But it all came right back to the same thing to answer kind of like your earlier question was, you know, my first year in England, well, on the second return when I was just coaching, there was a team called the London Towers who had won everything for like, you know, they were like Golden State of the year. You know, they'd won like 9 years in a row or something. And they just had the biggest budget. They had, this is back when there was only two Americans team. They had every English player on their team, every single one of them, you know, on one team. And just used to get in the car every like two or three times a week and drive down to London and sit in the front row and watch them play over and over and over, just watching like, you know, this is the team I got to figure out how to beat. A lot of that just came from study and work and really getting to know them, and those ideas conjure up after you see him play 40 times live, you know?
I should just mention here that I actually played against the London Towers when I was at Duke.
No
My
kidding.
Freshman year, we took a trip during fall break to London.
You I sure think
did. We spent 3 or 4 days there.
And this you know
was,
what?
This is fall
And
of
you
02.
Know what? I yeah. was coaching that team. Is that Luol Deng? Was Luol Deng with you, or was that another?
No, that was – no, Luol was –
I'm just trying to think. I think that was you were there, and I was coaching. Were you a freshman?
Yeah, I was a freshman.
Yeah, I was coaching that London Towers team. Wow. I was going to say, we played Duke a couple times. Yeah,
that's wild.
Yeah.
That's wild. In going to sort of the thinking outside the box, and I'm glad you brought up this this Belgian point guard, 38-year-old guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like, you're not going to bring the ball up.
Yeah.
We were talking earlier about the box and one with Steph.
Yep.
Is there a tougher player to game plan for right now than Steph Curry?
Yeah, there's a handful of them. As you know, he's really, really tough, without a doubt. But you know, I mean, you know who the other ones are. It's really hard to figure out what to do with LeBron. He's just seen, and he seems to see and beat everything. It's hard to make him that uncomfortable. Giannis really hard. Harden, Durant. There's quite a few of them actually, but Steph's unbelievable. I can't believe the kind of shape he must be in. As fast as he runs, whole game, every game.
That's what Pascal said.
Yeah, that's what amazed me playing him in the finals. I just, you know, one of the things I said over and over in that series was like, I know they're running fast, but you got to run fast too. You know, we got to run fast too. Keep chasing them. You know, like play tag and keep chasing them because it's like nonstop.
I think you alluded to this when we sat down. You said something like, I was a headache to game plan for.
Yeah.
It's very nice of you to say. But for players like that, are you literally losing sleep? Like, how much are you thinking about, especially once you get to the playoffs and you've got to figure out a series against Giannis or a series against Steph?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like you know, in all seriousness with you, you did something that was unique that they never would really see. You know, it was you know, you'd be down in that corner, you'd physically strong, and you'd, you know, get a good start and push off on them. And then when you'd get clearance,
I would certainly use some leverage.
Yes, me and you would have these conversations during the game. You were like, I'd say, he's pushing off. And you'd say, well, your guy's holding me first. And he's right, because I would tell him to hold you, you know, hold you first. But it seemed to backfire on us sometimes. And then when you'd get around the screen, you'd make such clearance, different than a lot of guys did, you know, that kind of throw ahead that you do and get away. And you know, we were coming up with all kinds of things to just go around the other side of you and all, you know, because everybody's trying to catch up and get back in front. And by that time, you had already had the shot up. So we were trying to go around the back and challenge you to your right hand. And we were trying everything to, you know, we were literally doing drills where guys were trying to push our guys over at the start of, you know, at the start and stay in the race, you know. So, but I don't think we lose sleep about them too much. I think it's, I don't know. It's fun. We got to do it every, you know, we got to come up with this stuff on the fly sometimes and try to get it in. And that team in 2019, I've said it as 100 times, but the things they could do on the fly adjustment wise in a game defensively was just, it was incredible. I've never seen anything like it.
So I have to bring this up just because he's going to get mad. And we talked about this with Pascal, but the shot,
yeah,
Kawhi's shot, when it was happening, what was your initial thought once the ball was inbounded?
Well, I mean, a couple things. Like, I felt okay, like, about the whole situation, right? I mean, I think that series was a toss-up. I mean, obviously, right? Seven games went. I'd kind of figured that we'd played well. Right, it was a weird series. There was a couple really bad games in there. They'd blow us out. We'd blow them out. They'd blow us up. Then there was some great games. I thought in that particular game, I was okay if it went to overtime. I thought we had a good feel of the game. So when he came off there, you know, it was okay. I mean, I was just hoping he was going to squeeze something off and not, you know, not. He'd had a bunch of looks this year, and he hadn't really made many, and he was due to get lucky on one. And lucky did he get.
There was actually a shot early in the season, maybe December, against the Portland Trailblazers, where he was shooting over a smaller player. He wasn't shooting over Joel, and he was probably at 15, 16 yep. feet and not 20 feet
yep.
At the end of the game, and it went in. Very similar shot. The guy has an unnatural spin on the ball or something, because of those shots looked like they were going to be short.
Yep, he does. He really... I mean, you've seen the size of his hands, I'm sure, and the strength in him, and the way he snaps his wrist. I mean, he literally gets all his shooting power, just, you know, I would say a lot of the forces right there in his wrists and fingers makes that thing really turn.
One of the things when you first became the head coach, and certainly in your time as an assistant with the Raptors, you know, one of the things you guys tried to do was shoot more threes. And I had a long conversation with Draymond last week, just about the evolution of three-point shooting in the NBA. And I played on that Magic team that made the finals, four out, one in. The yeah. previous iteration yeah. of that was the Phoenix Suns. If you look at those teams now and the amount of threes we shot, we'd be last in the league.
Yeah,
It's crazy. And Steph certainly is a supernova. He's one of one, mm-hmm. A generational talent. But the league, by and large, is now heavy on attacking the rim and shooting threes. Offensively, do you see the next evolution of offensive basketball, or is it just small tweaks? Are we in this sort of three-point revolution for a long time?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, for sure. I think that everybody is now on board. You know, you talk about where you guys would place, and it was outlandish the number you shot, and now it'd be like, you know, even like the pace of the game, the Suns. Remember the run-and-gun Suns with Nash? They'd be 30th in pace right now, you know? I mean, because when there's two teams going, you know, it changes. But I think so. I mean, I think that we're going to see the high volume of threes, but I do see a little bit of a movement back of certain teams to continue to work for the non-paint twos. And I think that – I mean, I thought last year was the biggest change in regular season physicality. Not very much of it. To playoff physicality, a lot of it, and then all of a sudden, well, what happens? Guys can't beat guys off the dribble so easy, which means not as much paint shrinkage, and then, you know, not as a kickouts, or kickouts are there and guys are back on them. You know, the number of made threes in the playoffs was down considerably to the regular season. It always is, but so I do think that the physicality gets back into the game a bit, and you can't do anything but shoot the non-paint twos. You know, you got to get it to your guys that can score buckets and get out of the way.
OM3 fans, I need to tell you about the most comfortable pants out there. They're from Vuori, and they're magnificent. I'm not kidding. Jason told me about them. He called them butter on your legs. Vuori provides a new perspective on performance apparel, perfect if you are sick and tired of traditional old workout gear. Everything is designed to work out in, but doesn't look or feel like it. So comfortable, you will want to wear it all the time, and I do. Honestly, it's comfier than whatever you're wearing right now. Now, the pants I mentioned up top is called the Men's Sunday Performance Jogger. Grab yourself a pair. It'll change your life. Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. Get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/JJ. That's Vuori.com/JJ. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Go to Vuori.com/JJ and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
I played for, I don't know, six or seven coaches. I guess maybe five because I had Stan twice. But on Brian Hill. Six head coaches. Common question I get, and a common question I ask other players is he a good coach? You played for so-and-so. Yep. Is he a good coach?
Right.
You know? And I've been thinking a lot about this lately, like what actually makes a good coach in the NBA? Because first of all, so much of it is situation. You know, do you have the talent? Are you in a rebuilding situation?
Yes.
Are you going for a win?
Yes.
I mean, Dwayne Casey got coach of the year.
Yes.
And was fired, I think, 12 months later, 18 months later, whatever it was. What makes a good coach? It's such a subjective.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, I think it's, I answer it the same way when people, I don't know if it's related, but people ask me, you know, like, what's your coaching philosophy? You know, I mean, it's a big question, right? But for me, I always try to say a couple things. I mean, one is you've got to instill that you're playing to win the game, right? I know that sounds really simple, but that is how we're judged. That's why they keep score. You know, all those simple little things. And right under that, though, I always say 1A is, can we increase each player's value in the marketplace, right? Like, and number one always helps that. You know, the guys that make the All-Star team are always from the winning teams, right? The guys that win the end-of-the-year awards are always from the winning teams. MVPs come, you know, those things are really closely related. I mean, I think it's one of the things I love about here. Like, Masai rewards winning, right? If you're winning, he's going to reward you on the and those things are. So that's like, I'm not afraid to like say that and talk to that about the players a lot, right? A lot about how are we getting you to another place and a better contract and a longer contract or from the 13th to ninth man to sixth man. You know, what is it we can do? And we spend a lot of time trying to get them better, you know, and what's getting them better? Well, we got to develop them. We got to work with them. We got to do the shooting. We're not afraid to tinker with their shot right when they get here. We're not afraid to put in the time. We're not this and that, but we're also not afraid to, what we do is teach them that winning, you know, we got to coach winning. You know, the film sessions one-on-one are about, these are winning basketball plays, right? So that's it for me, man. That's what makes a good coach. I mean, there's a zillion other things. Can you sub good? Can you time out good? Can you draw up plays good? You know, you got to bail them out sometimes. Can you get on them a little bit when they need it? And can you put your arm around them when they need that too? I guess there's all kinds of stuff going on.
So I guess to follow up on that, we talk about this. We've talked about it with DeMar and with Fred when they came on before, and we talk about this with the Heat a lot. Like, we sort of joke about like the Heat culture or whatever, but the culture around these winning organizations, who the players sometimes shift in and out, but the teams sort of continue the level of success. How long do you think it takes to really build something like that? To build that in an organization where you can feel like no matter what the moving parts are, there's a culture that's sort of sustainable that can be kind of, you know, plug and play.
Well, it's very tough in this league, right? To just say we're going to win all the time, right? No matter what happens to us, we're going to win all the time. Yeah. And our culture is going to make sure that that happens, right? That's very difficult. But I believe that, you asked me how long does it take? Listen, there's steps, I believe, you know, that you got to take on a daily basis if you want your team to be able to guard. And when you're young, it's going to take a rookie at least a full year to absolutely even figure out how to play defense in this league. Like, give them a year, and then the next year maybe they can start figuring it out on a consistent basis, right? Even as talented and as long and as athletic and as whatever they can be to have all the tools to be good, great defensively, these other guys they're trying to stop are awesome. And the things that coaches are doing are hard to stop and all those kind of things. So that's where it starts for me. So if you got a young team, it's going to take you a couple years to get that defensive mentality ingrained. I don't know. You can go from there.
Yeah. There's a, I know it's not a, we're not a corporation necessarily, each individual team, but there's a sort of a corporate knowledge that gets passed even year to year. And to Tommy's point, like the 2020 team, your 2020 team was one of my favorite teams to watch.
That team was awesome.
And there was a corporate knowledge of how to win in the NBA. And, you know, you made it to game 7 of the Eastern Conference semifinals, didn't win again the championship. But I said this multiple times last fall when we were talking on the pod. I'm like, I'm rooting for a Raptors Heat finals because there's something about the way those teams play that is the type of basketball that I believe in. And if you could just talk a little bit about that 2020 team, losing Kawhi,
yep,
and then coming back, having an amazing regular season and being in a chance to win again, despite, you know, lower expectations.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, that team got to play 22 games without Kawhi the year before for the load management games, and they went 17-5. They had a little chip on their shoulder, especially early when they didn't quite know what the hell was going on with Kawhi and why he wasn't playing some nights and why he wasn't. And we thought that was only going to be a couple month thing, but we kept kind of winning and they just said, we might as well just buy more time and all those kind of things. So they already knew they were capable and they really believed in it. They guarded, like, you know, they were just so connected on defense. And I'll say this, like Fred, Kyle, Serge, Mark, Pascal are special players, and four of those guys will guard you when Serge gets playing defense, which he'll do. You know, we'll give him a couple shots and get him going. You know, when he gets playing, he's like a captain back there. Mark's a totally great defender. You know, Kyle will fight everybody the whole game, and Fred's a great defender too. And there was just a specialness about those four guys. And I just don't. I mean, when you get and Pascal as a fifth, right? Didn't have much of a bench. When you think about that bench, we had Norman Powell and I think Rondé. Hollis Jefferson was like our eighth man. I'm trying to think. Pat McCaw played a few games but was hurt most of the year. I'm probably skipping somebody. OG. Yeah. OG was just kind of coming into his own too. As a defender, you know, he had the tools.
Those teams, the 19 team and the 20 team, the defense to me operated like a single organism, where all the parts were somehow, like the DNA matched, and all the parts were somehow connected.
Yeah,
it was really a beautiful thing to watch, and it was tough to play against. It was really tough to play
you
against.
No, they had such great communication. You know this from being a player, where guys just don't tell you, like, communicate just so they maybe don't have to play defense or they don't want to. Like, they could have told you, like, hey, this is strong, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, you're like, why didn't you say something? Like, well, you know, I could have. But those guys did. And, like, like I said, like, there was stuff happening on the fly. Like, I don't know. What's an example? Whatever, somebody's posting up on the right block and it's a double team guy he likes turning right. So we're forcing him whatever, but here's the double team. And so they come down the next time and put him on the other block and we'd say, well, we still don't want him to go right. So now let's shift our double teaming from doing it along the baseline. And they'd be like, on the fly after a free throw, you know, we'd be like, base X now. And they'd be like, everybody be yelling, we're base X, you know, like, and they'd get done, like, incredible. Incredible. Usually you're like, oh my God, we got to call timeout and tell them that, you know, or whatever. But they were just such great communicators with each other.
And then while you're scrambling after the double team, Kyle would slide underneath somebody and take a charge.
Take another charge. We sure missed that, man. Holy smokes. We went from first to last in charges in a hurry with his departure.
He's ridiculous. He's always somehow lurking. He's always somehow lurking. The timing was immaculate with him.
Yeah.
Before we let you go, I want to ask you about the logo, like the hat, the hat thing.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm very curious, sort of your perspective on branding as a coach,
right?
Because as players,
yeah,
right, we're all about branding.
Yeah.
It gets ingrained in our in our brains at a very young age, especially with this generation who's grown up with hundreds of thousands of Twitter followers and Instagram followers from the time they were 14. And I'm curious about that aspect of your branding.
Okay, so that thing was like a total accident, right? Like, I think we went to a fall coaches meeting in Chicago, and I think it's Travis Matthews, they were there giving out some hats and some shirts, and they gave me one of their black hats and it has a TM on it, and I just liked it. It was all black. I wear a lot of our colors, and I wear it. I was wearing it to a couple press conferences, and my brother, who was working at University of Northern Iowa, the Nike rep, went over and said, why does your brother keep wearing these Travis Matthews hats on the press conferences? And he's like, I was just wearing a free hat, and the guy said, kind of looks like his initials. I'm going to get him some Nike hats and put an N on them. And they made like four of them. And so I quit wearing the Travis Matthews ones. I start wearing the NN ones, and I'm wearing them for a long time, and nobody says anything. Nobody even really can even hardly see it, right? And then, like, one playoff game, I think, in the first round, I think Tim Bontemps from ESPN raised his hands at the press conference and said, is that your initials on your hat? And I was like, yeah. And I kind of got up and got out of there. But then it kind of became a thing. And we started the foundation, and people wanted to buy them. And, so we sell them all the stuff. The Dr. J stuff comes through the foundation, and just ways for us to raise money for the foundation, really.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And apparently Nick has invited me to the foundation's golf tournament next summer, I hope to attend.
All right, awesome.
All right, we appreciate the time. We gotta get on a flight, head back to New York.
All right, great to see you guys. Right. Thanks for coming to Toronto. Yeah. All right, take care. Yep.
If you like The Old Man and the Three, you can listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that saved Abercrombie? Or which real tech acquisition is like Game of Thrones? Or the one financial equation that can finally solve climate change? Then check out the Daily News podcast, The Best One Yet. Every morning on The Best One Yet, hosts Nick and Jack serve up three of the most interesting business news stories and why you need to know them in just 20 minutes. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies, you're going for that promotion at work, or you just want to know the trends before your friends, be in the know this year by starting your morning with the best one yet every weekday. Follow the best one yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.